Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Bareback Facts, of course, with me, your host, Dallas Duclo. And I got to say right now, guys, I am having some issues with my music. So we're going to proceed without it for now. Since we don't have it at the moment going, I'm not sure. Ah, there we go. Beautiful. Beautiful. Now we can have a little bit of music here. Maybe. Nope. Doesn't want to do it. All right. Guys, today we're going to be talking about Satanism. We are going to specifically be talking more so about the origins of Satanism. Where does it come from? Where does this concept come from? What is its origin? What are the key tenets within Satanism? What makes it significant? What makes it appealing to people? Ah, here we go. Let's have a little bit. There we go. Hardly makes it as fun without some intro music, doesn't it? All right, so we're going to be talking a little bit about where does Satanism come from, and we're going to take away a lot of the mysticism, a lot of the misconceptions about Satanism. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. Let's get started. All right, so first thing we need to remember is there are some things about Satanism that separate it from other religious ideologies that exist today. We have a lot of different religious ideologies that exist in our world, and this one is particularly unique. So what is so unique about Satanism? Well, while Satanism is one of the most controversial belief systems in the world today, in whatever expression it takes, and we'll get to that particular aspect of it in a moment, Satan, who not all satanic groups acknowledge or recognize, is presented in the Hebrew and Christian Bible as the chief enemy of God and the most evil being in the universe. As a result, many people both fear and are intrigued by certain versions of Satanism, in especially expressions that incorporate things such as quote-unquote satanic worship and quote-unquote satanic symbols. Terms like Satanism, Satanic, and even the name Satan encompass a variety of ideological, philosophical, and spiritual beliefs today. Satanic groups can be quite different from one another, but use the same terminology. There are different ways to classify satanic groups according to how each group believes and behaves, and not every group performs satanic rituals as you would assume that they would. Not every group or person who practices Satanism participates in satanic worship, reads the satanic Bible written by LaVey, or uses traditional satanic symbols, or even attends the Church of Satan. So not every form of Satanism professes a belief in gods or spirits. While some forms of Satanism believe in spiritual entities, others have a materialistic worldview, and in relation to faith and religion, they are atheists or agnostics. So let's take a look at the official Church of Satan itself, which was founded on April 30th, 1966, by Anton Zander LaVey. They claim to be the first above-ground organization in history to be openly dedicated to the acceptance of man's true nature, that of a carnal beast living in a cosmos that is indifferent to our existence. To those members of the Church of Satan, Satan is the symbol that best suits the nature of who we are by carnal birth. Nature of we who are carnal by birth. People who feel no battles raging between their thoughts and feelings, who do not embrace the concept of a soul imprisoned in a body, to them, Satan represents pride, liberty, and individualism, qualities often defined as evil by those who worship external entities who feel there is a war between their minds and their emotions. And if you take a look, LaVey explains in his classic work, The Satanic Bible, man, using his brain, invented all the gods, and doing so because many of our species cannot accept or control their personal egos, feeling compelled to conjure up one or a multiplicity of characters who can act without hindrance or guilt upon whims and desires. Therefore, all gods are thus externalized forms, magnified projections of the true nature of their creators, personifying aspects of the universe or personal temperaments which many of their followers find to be troubling. Worshipping any god is thus worshipping by proxy those who invented that god in the mind of a Satanist. So, for Satanists, worshipping any god is therefore worshipping anyone who formulated the idea of that god. You are worshipping an idea created by another person, at least in the view of Satanists. Since the Satanist understands that all gods are fiction, instead of bending a knee in worship to or seeking friendship or unity with such mythical entities, he or she places themselves at the center of their own subjective universe and as the highest value within that universe. So they themselves place themselves at the center of their own universe. They are the most important thing in their own universe, that create their own universe. So Satanists are thus their own gods. They can offer love to those who deserve it, deliver their wrath within reasonable limits upon those who seek to cause them or that which they cherish harm. So these are some of the ideas behind Satanism. Now, I know this sounds a little spooky, but it's really not. There are some rules, and we're going to get into those. So first off, we're going to start with the 11 satanic rules of Earth, of the Earth. These are rules that Satanists tend to try and follow. These come from the book Xander LaVey wrote, Anton LaVey wrote. The first on the list is, do not give opinions or advice unless you are asked. This means that I would not make a very good Satanist, unfortunately. I'm so sad. I'm getting left out of the club. Number two, do not tell your troubles to others unless you are sure they want to hear, man, I would really be a terrible Satanist. Number three, when in another's lair, show him respect or else do not go there. Well, I think we can all agree to that. Number four, if a guest in your abode annoys you, you may treat him cruelly and without mercy. Well, you know, I'm kind of on board. Number five, do not make sexual advances unless you are given the mating signal. I don't know what their mating signal is, but I'm assuming that means unless you are given invitation. So do with that in knowledge what you will. Number six is do not take that which does not belong to you unless it is a burden to the other person and he cries out to be relieved. Number seven, acknowledge the power of magic if you have employed it successfully to obtain your desires. If you deny the power of magic after having called upon it with success, you will lose all that you have obtained. So this is sort of an interesting way of viewing magic, a little bit different than what we view within the realm of Wicca or you know, other forms of religion that practice witchcraft to a degree. Number eight, do not complain about anything to which you need not subject yourself. Well, this is an interesting way of viewing the world, to say the least, rather than complain. You should determine whether or not what you're complaining about is something you can change. And if you can change it, at least in the view of Satanists, you shouldn't complain about it. Number nine, big one here within Satanism, do not harm little children. Key tenet here within Satanism is do not harm little children. Number 10 is do not kill non-human animals unless you are attacked or you must eat. Again, right off the bat, we've got two rules that suggest, well, actually, I've seen three so far that we could probably assume do a very good, that we can probably assume are pretty important. And we can also see that these three, which I'm going to circle back to in a moment, definitely undercut some of the misconceptions about Satanism. We'll return to that in a moment when we get down the list. The final of these 11 satanic rules of the earth: when walking in open territory, bother no one. If someone bothers you, ask him to stop. If he does not stop, destroy him. I really wish I had a soundbite for that. I had so many ideas. But we will move on from that. So I want to circle back to these three very specific rules from this list that, for me, take away some of the mysticism and some of the misconceptions about Satanism. Because in many cases, when we hear people talk about Satanism, we hear people assume violence, and they assume blood sacrifice and rituals of sex with children and women who don't have a choice, and all these ideas. So the fifth rule on the list is: do not make sexual advances unless you are given the mating signal, which I can only assume means do not make sexual advances towards a person unless they are attempting to reciprocate their interest in you. This really kind of flies in the face against some of the sort of fear-mongering that people have done about Satanism, in that they suggest that, Satanists are rather violent and they will do terrible things to you, which is not necessarily true. Then we take a look at number nine here: do not harm little children. I mean, I can't tell you how many stories I personally heard, from people that just have no idea what they're talking about, who talk about Satanists as though they will literally sacrifice children on altars and murder them, and all this terrible, terrible nonsense, that they abuse people, as in particular children and women and the like. And then finally, do not kill non-human animals unless you are attacked or for your food. Again, there's all these misconceptions, all this myth about satanic cults that doesn't really have a whole lot of ground to stand on, at least among those who would practice, this particular brand of Levian Satanism, which is particularly one of the better known varieties of Satanism. And these three rules sort of fly in the face of the sort of propaganda-esque discussions you hear people have about Satanism, the sort of mysticism that's involved with it, that, oh my gosh, they worship Satan. They probably, eat babies. They drink fetuses or something. It's going to be terrible. And yet, right off the bat, within these 11 almost commandments, really, they basically say, don't do these things. So if a person is truly in belief of this ideology, they're going to stop. They're not going to have anything to do with those sorts of things. I want to move on now to the nine satanic sins. That's right. There are satanic sins that a Satanist can commit, and there are nine of them. Little one-upmanship, or in this case, a two-upmanship. Booyah! So instead of seven deadly sins, they got nine. They're stepping it up. Get your game on. Number one on the list of the nine satanic sins, according to Anton LaVey, stupidity. The top of the list for satanic sins, it is the cardinal sin of Satanism. What does LaVey have to say about it? He says ignorance is one thing, but our society thrives increasingly on stupidity. It depends on people going along with whatever they're told. The media promotes a cultivated stupidity as a posture that is not only acceptable but laudable. Satanists must learn to see through the tricks and cannot afford to be stupid. Stupidity is seen as the chief sin. One major aspect of Satanism is to be constantly trying to improve yourself by seeking knowledge. Again, if we look at Satanism, they trace much of their roots to this this allegorical figure. To a degree, many of the characters within the Bible are rather allegorical, and that is to say that they don't necessarily have to be real people. In many cases, probably aren't, but they do teach a lesson in many cases, and that is what makes them valuable. Satan himself is a whole slippery slope The word Satan comes from an Arabic word, shaitan, which means adversary or to judge in certain translations. And the first time you really see it in the Bible in particular, or in the Old Testament of the Torah, which is the, you know, makes up the great deal of the Torah, is in the book of Job, in which God makes somewhat of a wager with this figure, Satan, who is actually an angel that's working for him. And basically God gives him power to basically ruin Job's life. And the thought behind this is, if we ruin Job's life, he'll turn his back on me, and then we'll know how much he really loves me, because, you know, that's the best way to do it. It's kind of like the game that your crazy ex-girlfriend played with you, where she would ask you a question that she already knew the answer to, and then basically just made your life miserable. Basically, she put you in a no-win situation. This is what God and Satan did. They put poor Job in a no-winner. They gave him all kinds of good stuff, and then at the end of the day, they pretty much kill his whole family, and they kill all of his livestock, and they strike him with leprosy and all this good stuff. But it's okay, because Job's a trooper, and he sticks it out, and it's all gravy from there. It's all gravy. He sticks it out. God supposedly gives him everything back, and it's better than it ever was before. But never you mind the fact that he killed everything, that everybody and everyone that Job ever loved before that. We won't get into that. That's not as important. But what is important is that this figure, Satan, appears prominently in, not really, doesn't really appear prominently in the Bible from that point on. He actually appears more prominently in a work done by Milton, Lost, for those of you unfamiliar with it. And this is John Milton's work. It is a poetic book. It's a large poem that discusses these fall of the angels from heaven, their disgrace. He is the first guy to really write about Lucifer or Satan as we would formulate him. And it is this allegorical figure within Milton's construction, within Milton's poem, that Satanists draw their inspiration from, because this version of Satan is actually known as Lucifer, which means the light bringer. He is this bringer of knowledge. He is a spirit of rebellion, a spirit of that seeks wisdom. And so this is why Satanists tend to, this is where this idea of Satanism really gets its roots from, this idea that they can be light bringers. They themselves can find this knowledge. They view Satan, the character Satan, or Lucifer, as the ultimate rebel. He sticks out. He doesn't go with the status quo, and he really stands up against dogma. He stands up against really organized religion, organized everything. He is the bringer of, you know, he's the rebel. He's a rebel, and his cause is to bring knowledge and wisdom in what he views to be an archaic society, a society that is largely living in the past. And he's here to bring on the future. So with that little segue, which kind of felt like I needed to go back and cover that for you guys, let's get back to these nine satanic sins. So we talked about the first, which is stupidity, which allowed me for a very nice little segue to talk about where this idea of Satan and Lucifer come from. The second satanic sin is pretentiousness. Empty posturing can be most irritating and isn't applying the cardinal rules of quote-unquote lesser magic. On equal footing with stupidity, what keeps the money in circulation these days, everyone's made to feel like a big shot whether they can come up with the goods or not. So don't be pretentious. Don't walk around acting like you're better than somebody else, better than everybody else. Solipsism This is the third satanic sin. LaVey says it can be very dangerous for Satanists. Projecting your reactions, responses, and sensibilities onto someone who is probably far less attuned than you are. It is the mistake of expecting people to give you the same consideration, courtesy, and respect that you naturally give them. They won't. Instead, Satanists must strive to apply the dictum of do unto others as they do unto you. It's work for people, and requires constant vigilance, lest you slip into a comfortable illusion of everyone being like you. As has been said, certain utopias would be ideal in a nation of philosophers, but unfortunately, we are far from that point. So in the view of LaVey, you can't grow complacent, but you also can't assume that everybody is going to be cool with you. Not everybody is going to like you, and that's okay. You shouldn't try to make everybody like you. Which is an interesting way of looking at things. Number four is self-deceit. It's in the nine satanic statements, which we're also going to look at, but deserves to be repeated here, according to LaVey, another cardinal sin. Do not pay homage to any of the sacred cows presented to you, including the roles we are expected to play ourselves. The only time self-deceit should be entered into is when it's fun and with awareness, but then it's not self-deceit. So according to LaVey, you mustn't allow yourself to be deceived by yourself. You can't delude yourself into believing what everybody else is. Number five. Here comes one of the big ones. Herd conformity. Excuse me. Herd conformity. Now, obviously, from a satanic stance, we're going to want to stay away from that. It's all right to conform to a person's wishes if it ultimately benefits you. But only fools follow along with the herd, letting an impersonal entity dictate you. Choose a master wisely instead of being enslaved by the whims of the many. So according to LaVey, it's very important that you're able to accept new information, but you cannot allow yourself to just go with the flow, as it were. You can't allow yourself to get caught up in what everybody else is doing, because you're not like everybody else. You're different. You're special. You are entering into a world largely based on knowledge and finding knowledge and accepting and looking for new information. And so you got to leave yourself open. If you just accept everything and just jump right into what everybody else is doing, you're going to miss out. So you don't want to do that. Number six, a lack of perspective. So this one can lead to a lot of problems for a Satanist. You must never lose sight of who and what you are and what a threat you can be by your very existence. According to LaVey, Satanists are making history right now every day. Always keep the wider historical and social picture in mind. This is an important key to both lesser and greater magic. See the patterns and fit things together as you want the pieces to fall into place. Do not be swayed by herd constraints. Know that you are working on another level entirely from the rest of the world. So you must maintain perspective. Keep everything in perspective with what you are doing. Number seven, forgetfulness. Be aware that this is one of the keys to brainwashing people into accepting something new and different, when in reality, it's something that was once widely accepted but is now presented in a new package. We're expected to rave about the genius of the creator and forget the original. This makes for a disposable society. So in the view of LaVey, it's important that you don't forget past orthodoxies. Remember what you know about religion so you don't slip and fall and end up back in the church. You don't want to do that. Number eight, counterproductive pride. Pride is great to the point when you begin to throw out the baby, to the point you begin to throw out the baby with the bathwater, according to LaVey. The rule of Satanism is, if it works for you, great. When it stops working for you, when you've painted yourself into a corner and the only way out is to say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I wish we could compromise somehow, then you must do it. So according to LaVey, pride is something that it's okay to have, but you have to know when you are wrong and be willing to accept that, because eventually you will be wrong and you need to be able to accept that and move on from that and grow as a person. We're moving right along here. Finally, number nine, the ninth satanic sin. Ooh, spooky. This is the physical application of the balance factor. Lack of aesthetics. Aesthetics is important and should be cultivated. It is obvious that no one can collect any money off of classical standards of beauty and form most of the time, so they are discouraged in a consumer society. But an eye for beauty, for balance, is an essential satanic tool and must be applied for greatest magical effectiveness. It's not what's supposed to be pleasing, it's what is. So aesthetics is a personal thing reflective of one's own nature, but there are universally pleasing and harmonious configurations that should not be denied. So don't be afraid not to go out there and get yourself what you want. Ah, so now we're going to move on to the next set of statements. This is the nine satanic statements here. So we talked about the nine satanic sins. We talked about the 11 satanic rules of the earth. Now we're going to talk about the nine satanic statements, which originally appeared in the Satanic Bible. And let's get right into it. So Number one, Satan represents indulgence instead of abstinence. Number two, Satan represents vital existence instead of spiritual pipe dreams. Number three, Satan represents undefiled wisdom instead of hypocritical self-deceit. And number four, Satan represents kindness to those who deserve it instead of love wasted on ingrates. I didn't write it. I'm just reading it to you. Satan represents vengeance instead of turning the other cheek. This is number five. Number six, Satan represents responsibility to the responsible instead of concern for quote-unquote man as just another animal, sometimes better, more often worse than those that walk on all fours, who because of his divine, spiritual, and intellectual development has become the most vicious animal of all. Number eight, Satan represents all of the so-called sins as they lead to physical, mental, or emotional gratification. And number nine, Satan has been the best friend the church has ever had and has kept it in business all these years. So, that's sort of a playful jab there by the Church of Satan against mainstay of church in general, the Christian church. So here we've got a decent grasp now of what we're looking at here. So we've got a decent grasp now of sort of what the tenets of Satanism are, what sort of the beliefs are. Now, again, we return to this, the fact that not every person who believes in Satanism, not every person who practices it, is really down with, you know, Satan. They're like all about the devil and demons. There are plenty of Satanists who are atheists or agnostic, and they just simply believe in a more hedonistic lifestyle, a lifestyle in which they do what they desire to do. They pursue desire above all else. They go after the things that they want in life, which is a different way of viewing the world. They're not caught up on this on ideas about judgment, about Judgment Day. They're not worried about where they're going to spend eternity. They're not worried about those things. In contrast, those Satanists who are professed atheists and agnostics see Satanism as a philosophical worldview manifesting in a particular lifestyle, often characterized by questioning authority. Excuse me. Wow. Good water. So, again, as I mentioned earlier, when I did my little brief segue from the nine satanic sins, and I talked about what Satan represents for many Satanists, from a philosophical standpoint, Satan is a rebel, right? He represents rebellion. He represents question and authority. And we see here that for many Satanists, particularly those who are atheists or agnostics, they see Satanism as a philosophical worldview, manifesting in a particular lifestyle that is often characterized by questioning authority. So there are those who are more likely to perform satanic rituals. Those people are more spiritual in nature. They are more tied to a spiritual sense of Satanism, whereas those who are more atheist or agnostic or less spiritual, they're probably not going to perform magic or rituals. Satanic groups include a wide range of adherents. Some Satanists, are, dabbling in self-proclaimed diabolical groups and covens. And these young people practice Satanism recreationally, and their activities often include listening to heavy metal music with satanic, lyrics, and role-playing games and drug use and whatnot, which is to a degree problematic in and of itself. These individuals that are dabbling in Satanism tend to just be kind of experimenting a little bit and seeing what works for them. Other Satanists belong to groups whose purpose is less recreational. This type of satanic order, such as the Church of Satan, is often esoteric and regularly practices occult rituals and is often populated by adults rather than youngsters and teenagers. Satanic organizations themselves have different purposes. Some are public, while others are private. Public groups are sometimes incorporated as nonprofit religious organizations and can even have tax-exempt status in the U.S. This subset of Satanism produces the most literature and is even recognized by the United States military. There are, however, private groups as well, which largely operate in secret. Satanism itself is not any one set of beliefs. It is a group of ideological and philosophical beliefs based on the character of Satan. The contemporary religious practice of Satanism began, of course, with the founding of the Church of Satan in 1966, although a few historical precedents do exist for the worship of Satan, or supposed satanic worship, and these prior to the public practice, Satanism existed primarily as an accusation by various Christian groups toward perceived ideological opponents rather than a self-identity. So in many cases, people were using Satan in the old context, which was to say they were an adversary of the church. Now, it's been used, Satanism and symbols associated with Satanism have been, used and appropriated by artists and entertainers for symbolic expression. Throughout history, people have been accused of practicing Satanism or quote-unquote devil worship. During the Middle Ages, we saw the Inquisition, which was attached to the Roman Catholic Church, alleged that various heretical Christian sects and groups such as the Knights Templar and the Cathars were performing secret satanic rituals. Of course, they had no evidence for that. In the subsequent early modern period, belief in a widespread satanic conspiracy of witches resulted in mass trials of alleged witches across Europe, something I talked about a little bit before. Accusations that satanic conspiracies were active and that they were behind events such as Protestantism and the French Revolution continued to be made in Christendom during the 18th to 20th century. In the 80s and 90s, the satanic ritual abuse hysteria spread through the United States and the United Kingdom amid fears that groups of Satanists were regularly sexually abusing and murdering children and their rights. However, in most of these cases, again, there is no corroborating evidence that any of that took place or that any of the people who were abusing children were ever actually practitioners of a satanic religion or guilty of the allegations leveled against them in those cases. So since the 19th century, various small religious groups have emerged that self-identify as Satanists or use satanic iconography. Appeared in the after the 60s are widely diverse. But two major trends are theistic Satanism and atheistic Satanism, something I've already talked about. There are those who believe in a theology involving Satan or involving certain forces that they believe in within Satanism, and then there are atheistic ones. So theistic Satanists tend to venerate Satan as an actual supernatural deity, viewing him not as an omnipotent, but rather as a patriarch, so he is the father of their religion, so to speak. In contrast, atheistic Satanists regard Satan as merely a symbol of certain human traits. Contemporary religious Satanism is predominantly an American phenomenon. The idea is spreading elsewhere with the effects of globalization and the internet, however, and the internet spreads awareness of other Satanists. It's also the main battleground for Satanist disputes. It started to reach Central and Eastern Europe in the 1990s, in time with the fall of the Soviet Union, and most noticeably sprang up around Poland and Lithuania, predominantly Roman Catholic countries. So interestingly enough, Satanism does have a bit of worldwide following. Now, again, as we move forward here, some more of this literature. Now, from the late 17th through the 19th century, the character of Satan was increasingly rendered unimportant in Western philosophy and ignored in Christian theology. While in folklore, he came to be seen as a foolish rather than menacing figure. The development of new values in the Age of Enlightenment in particular, those of reason and individualism contributed to a shift in how many Europeans began viewing this concept of Satan. In this context, a number of individuals took Satan out of the traditional Christian narrative and reread and reinterpreted him in light of their own time and their own interests, in turn generating new and very different portraits of Satan. The shifting view of Satan, again, owes many of its origins to John Milton's epic poem Paradise Lost from 1667, something I already talked about, in which Satan features as the protagonist. Now, while Milton himself never intended to portray Satan as a sort of sympathetic character within the story, he does portray Satan as a victim of his own pride who rebelled against God. He humanized him and also allowed him to be interpreted as a rebel against tyranny. This is how Milton's Satan was understood by later readers like Joseph Johnson, the publisher, and the anarchist philosopher William Godwin, who reflected in his book from 1793, Inquiry Concerning Political Justice. Paradise Lost gained a wide readership in the 18th century in Britain and in continental Europe, where it had been translated in French by Voltaire. Milton thus became a central character in rewriting Satanism and would be viewed by many later religious Satanists as a de facto Satanist, although I'm sure he would have something to say about that. Now, Romanticism factored in heavy as well into the reemergence of what has been termed the literary Satanism or Romantic Satanism. Among Romanticist poets, to adopt this view of Satan was an English poet, Percy B. Shelley, who wrote in his poem Laon and Cythna, praised the serpent, a reference to Satan as a force for good in the universe. Of course, Lord Byron, who included satanic themes in his 1821 play Cain, which of course is a dramatization of the biblical story of Cain and Abel. Another place that Satanism has been particularly influential, if only for the imagery that's used, the icons, the symbols that they supposedly use. We need only look to bands during the 60s and 70s, namely the American Coven, British Black Widow. But Satan references to Satan appear in the work of rock bands who were pioneering the heavy metal genre in Britain during the 70s. Black Sabbath, for instance, made mention of Satan in their lyrics, although many other bands' members were practicing Christians and other lyrics affirmed the power of the Christian God over Satan. In the 80s, greater use of satanic imagery is made by heavy metal bands like Slayer, Creator, Sodom, and Destruction. There are loads and loads of bands who use, particularly in the realm of heavy metal and death metal, we've got Deicide, Morbid Angel, Entombed, et cetera, et cetera. All these bands invoking sort of satanic imagery, quote unquote, satanic imagery, pictures of Baphomet and the like that have oftentimes been tied to Satanism. So we take a look I want to go back now. Now that we've sort of gotten to the more popular view now, I hope it's coming together for you guys. I hope you're enjoying this. So we've come to some more of the more popular view of what people view about Satanism. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Anton LaVey, who is seen as basically the founder of the Church of Satan. He is the writer of the Satanic Bible. So let's get right into him. Anton Xander LaVey, I was born in 1930, and he... Excuse me. Having an issue there. Let's get that back. There we are. There we go. Now, Anton LaVey was born in 1930. April 11, 1930, in Chicago, Illinois, and he would die on October 29, 1997, in San Francisco. Now, LaVey was the founder of the Church of Satan, I should say, which is the first organized church in modern times, promulgating a religious philosophy championing Satan as the symbol of personal freedom and individualism. Unlike the founders of other religions who claimed exalted inspiration delivered through some supernatural entity, LaVey readily acknowledged that he used his own faculties to synthesize Satanism based on his understanding of the human animal and insights gained from earlier philosophers who advocated materialism and individualism. Concerning his role as a founder, he said that if he didn't do it himself, someone else, perhaps less qualified, would have. So a man that thought rather highly of himself, to say the least. Again, he was born in Chicago. His parents soon relocated to California, the westernmost gathering place for the brightest and darkest manifestations of the American dream, according to LaVey. He saw it as a fertile environment for the sensitive child that he was, who would eventually mature into the role that the press would dub the Black Pope. From his Eastern European grandmother, young LaVey learned of superstitions that are still extant in that part of the world. These tales whetted his appetite for the Othra, leading him to become absorbed in classic dark literature such as Dracula and Frankenstein, which he devoured with a fury. He also became an avid reader of the pulp magazines, which first published tales now deemed classics of the horror and science fiction genres. He later befriended a seminal Weird Tales authors such as Clark Ashton Smith, Robert Barbour Johnson, and George Haas. His fantasy was captured by fictional characters found in the works of Jack London, in comic strip characters like Ming the Merciless, as well as historical figures of a diabolical cast such as Cagliostro, Rasputin, and Basil Zarahoff. Now, more interesting to him than the available occult literature, which he dismissed as being little more than sanctimonious white magic, were books of applied obscure knowledge such as Dr. William Wesley Cook's Practical Lessons in Hypnotism, Jane's Fighting Ships, and Manuals for Handwriting Analysis. LaVey himself possessed some musical abilities, were noticed early. He was given free rein by his parents to try his hand at various instruments, interestingly enough. LaVey was mainly attracted to keyboards because of their scope and versatility, and he found time to practice and could easily reproduce songs heard by ear without recourse to fake books or sheet music. This talent would prove to be one of his main sources of income for many years, particularly in his calliope playing during his carnival days and later his many stints as an organist in bars, lounges, and nightclubs. These venues gave him the chance to study how various melodic lines and chord progressions swayed the emotions of his audience. From the spectators at the carnival and spook shows to the individuals seeking the solace for the disappointments in their lives and distilled spirits and the smoke-filled taverns for which LaVey was providing a soundtrack. His odd interests marked him as an outsider, and he did not alleviate this by feeling any compulsion to be, quote-unquote, one of the boys. He despised team sports, gym class, and often cut classes to follow his own interests. He was an avid reader and watched films such as those which would later be labeled film noirs as German expressionist cinema such as M, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and Dr. Mabuse movies, his flashy mode of dress also served to amplify his alienation from the mainstream. LaVey would drop out of high school to hang around the hoodlum types and gravitated towards working in the circus and carnivals, first as a roustabout and cage boy and later as a musician. His curiosity would be rewarded through learning the ropes and working an act with the big cats, later assisting with the machinations of the spook show. He became very well-versed in the many rackets used to separate the rubes from their money, along with the psychology that led people to such pursuits. He played music for shows on Saturday nights, as well as tent revivalists on Sunday mornings, seeing many of the same people attending both. All this provided a firm, earthy background for his evolving, cynical worldview. After carnival season ended, LaVey would earn money by playing organ in Los Angeles area burlesque houses, and he relates that it was during this period that he had a brief affair with a then unknown Marilyn Monroe, according to him, supposedly. LaVey worked for a while as a photographer for the police department, and during the Korean War enrolled in San Francisco City College as a criminology major to avoid the draft. How nice. Both his studies and occupation revealed grim insights into human nature. At this time, he met and married Carol Lansing, who bore him his first daughter in 1952, Carla Maritza. And a few years earlier, LaVey had explored the writings of Aleister Crowley, and in 1951 met some of the Berkeley Thelemites. He was unimpressed as they were more spiritual and less wicked than he supposed they should be for disciples of Crowley's libertine creed. During the 50s, LaVey supplemented his income as a psychic investigator. This is a guy that's got a lot of stuff going on. So he helping to investigate nut calls referred to him by friends in the police department. These experiences proved to him that many people were inclined to seek a supernatural explanation for a phenomenon that had more prosaic causes. His rational explanations for events often disappointed the complainants, so LaVey embedded more exotic causes to make them feel better, giving him insight as to how religion often functions in people's lives. In 1956, he purchased a Victorian house on California Street in San Francisco's Richmond District. It was reputed to have been a speakeasy prior to his purchasing of it. He painted it black. It would later become home to the Church of Satan, and after his death, the house remained unoccupied until it was demolished by the real estate company, which owned the property on October 17th of 2001. LaVey met and became entranced by Diane Haggerty in 1959. He then divorced Carol in 1960. Haggerty and LaVey never married, but she bore him a second daughter, Zena Galatea, in 1964, and was his companion for many years. They later separated, and she sued him for alimony, and this was settled out of court. LaVey's final companion was Blanche Barton, who bore him his only son, Satan Xerxes Carnegie LaVey, on November 1st of 1993, and what a name. According to LaVey's wishes, she succeeded him as the head of the church after his death on October 29th of 1997, and in 2001, she passed on this position to Peter H. Gilmore, a longtime member of the Council of Nine. So LaVey led a very colorful life. He would write the Satanic Bible. And release it and let's see here. I believe it was 1967. Is that right? Yeah. So release his copy of the Satanic Bible, I believe, in 1967. So yeah. Very colorful life led by a very colorful individual. Left quite a bit of a legacy behind, to say the least. So, let's take a look, now that we've gotten an idea of who Anton LaVey is, the founder, I want to take a look also now at the Sigil of Baphomet, a prominent sigil. It's a symbol that we see a lot. So what is the Sigil of Baphomet? Oh, and for those of you interested, you can, by the way, acquire the Satanic Bible on Amazon. It was published in 1976, republished in 76, so you can get a copy of it. So those of you interested in exploring that, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that it is available. So there have been many rumors and claims regarding the Sigil of Baphomet. According to the Church of Satan, their website, their official website, prior to worldwide press being given to the Church of Satan and later the publication of the Satanic Bible, the now familiar goat/pentagram/leviathan graphic had not been used as the prime symbol for Satanism. If you examine the literature and imagery predating the founding of the Church of Satan in 1966, Satanism is usually denoted by an inverted cross or crucifix and blasphemous parodies of Christian art. There are also images of goats and devils and demons along with their sigils from grimoires, all used to represent the quote-unquote satanic. However, the complete graphic, which we now call the Sigil of Baphomet, only became associated as the foremost symbol of Satanism in the public and media consciousness after the founding of the Church of Satan and Dr. LaVey's use of it. From its inception, the Church of Satan has constantly spotlighted in print, film, and television media all over the globe, so this is to be expected. The word Baphomet dates back to the records of the Templar trials, and there are ongoing discussions concerning its derivation and meaning. However, there is no clear evidence that the symbol which we in the Church of Satan call Baphomet is similarly derived. The evidence, if any, has not yet been released in any public form. Just for those of you not particularly familiar with the Templar trials, the Templars were viciously tortured by the Catholic Church and the Catholic interrogators demanded to know who the Templars were worshiping, if it wasn't God. Even though some of the Templars no doubt claimed they were worshiping God, the Church knew better. They just knew that the Templars were just evil. They just knew it. They just believed it in their souls and in their hearts and in their minds that, they were just evil people. And so they had to kill them. If you're not picking up on the sarcasm there, I'm laying it on pretty thick. For those of you unfamiliar with the Templar trials, the Catholic Church basically tortured these guys until they basically gave up a name, and one of the fevered, horrified individuals suffering torment at the hands of the Catholic Church declared that it was Baphomet that they were worshiping in the hopes that he would be spared the fate of his companions. Whether he was or not is still a matter of discussion. How about that as a discussion for another time? Nonetheless, the Sigil of Baphomet is a reimagining of the pentagram and the pentacle. That was toyed with by LaVey. And the Church of Satan did file in 1981 and then received in 1983 a trademark which protects the use of the Sigil of Baphomet with the words Church of Satan. So the Church of Satan therefore has the legal right to place the trademark symbol, meaning registered trademark, next to this combination of symbol and words. This trademark also prohibits anyone from using something similar in combination of name and symbol, which could constitute the legal dilution or blurring of the trademark. So current trademark laws are now in flux regarding the issue of trademark blurring, the use of marks similar to existing trademarks, but they are moving in the direction of favoring the forbidding of marks that could be considered misleading in any way, shape, or form. They have a license to use this. Now, the Sigil of Baphomet itself is basically just their attempt to take the pentagram They use various influences such as the writings of Alephus Levi's writings, Dogma et Ritual de la Haute Magie, translated under the title of Transcendental Magic. So they've basically just taken various writings done by several individuals and came up with their own sort of logo, and the sigil of Baphomet is what comes out of that. But rather rather interesting, to say the least, that they have actually got a trademark to that, something that personally, before I started looking into it, I did not know. You learn something new all the time. I want to also now take a look at some of the Church of Satan's policies. Something that we could all learn a little bit from, something very interesting that we can take away from this. I want to take a look at this. So one of the Church of Satan's policies that they have, they actually have a policy on drug abuse. Let's take a look at that. The Church of Satan declared that they do not condone illegal activities if the use of certain drugs is illegal in their country, in your country or of residence. They are just that, illegal. They declared in their official statements, individuals who choose to ignore this and break the law do so at their own peril. Their actions as individuals shall not be construed as being sanctioned by the Church of Satan. Furthermore, they must pay the dire yet fully predictable consequences they brought down upon themselves, as the Church of Satan is not responsible for their actions and will not be used as an excuse for their lawless behavior. One major component of Satanism that I did not mention is that you are responsible for yourself. There is a lot more of an involvement here in the case of Satanism. An individual, just because an individual possesses great power, you as an individual have a great power, great agency, great freedom within Satanism. Whether you practice the spiritual variety, the theistic variety, or whether you practice the atheistic variety, there is a sense of independence, a sense of personal freedom that exists within Satanism. The idea that human beings are capable of great power, Satanism is just one philosophy that focuses on enlightening oneself and empowering oneself. However, you are still not absolved of your own personal responsibility, and it's something that's made very clear in these tenets of Satanism, in that you are responsible for your actions. So responsibility to the responsible. If you are a lawbreaker, you're on your own. The Church of Satan is not going to be protecting you, and Satanism does not allow for you to violate the law of the land that you're in. Particularly important dimension when we talk about Satanism is that there is a definite personal responsibility that exists there. You are personally responsible for your own actions. Just because you are, you can acknowledge yourself as, you know, sort of the god of your own universe, you still have to be willing to face up to the consequences of any action you commit. They also have policies regarding politics. I want to take a look at those as well. So what constitutes the Church of Satan's stance on any number of political issues is a topic that is often broached by students working on papers, journalists, etc. Now, according to official statements by Magus Peter H. Gilmore, who is, I believe, the current head of the Church of Satan, as has been said many times before, one's politics are up to each individual member, and most of our members are political pragmatists. They support political candidates and movements whose goals reflect their own practical needs and desires. As members of the church span an amazing political spectrum, which includes but is not limited to libertarians, liberals, conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, Reform Party members, independents, capitalists, socialists, communists, Stalinists, Leninists, fascists, anarchists, and just about anything else you can possibly imagine. It is up to each member to apply Satanism and determine what political means will reach his or her ends, and they are solely responsible each for their decision. Freedom and responsibility must be a novel concept for those who aren't Satanists. We take it in stride. Members who demand conformity from other members to their political particular political fetish are welcome to depart. So, again, I want to. This is very important that we take a look at this. One of the major reasons why I wanted to take a look at the policy that they had on politics is this line here by Magus Peter H. Gilmore that he says, it is up to each member to apply Satanism and determine what political means will reach his or her ends, and they are each solely responsible for this decision. Freedom and responsibility must be a novel concept for those who aren't Satanists. We take it in stride. As members who are deemed members who demand conformity from other members to their particular political fetish are welcome to depart. This feeds right back into what I was just talking about. This idea that yes, you're free to do whatever you desire to do within Satanism. You are free to do what you desire to do, to believe in what you desire to believe in. However, you must be willing to face the consequences of what you believe in and what you do. Just because you have the freedom to do whatever you choose to do does not mean there are not consequences. So you have agency, you have freedom. And largely within Satanism, there is a stressing of this freedom. There is this idea, this re-emphasis that there is, you are free. You're free to do what you wish to do. You're free to do what you want to do. You can be whatever kind of person you want to be. But you also have to remember that with every action comes a consequence. There is a result to every action, and you have to be willing to face up to those consequences because that's what it's – because you have to. You're not going to be able to outrun that. Let's see here. Let's see. I want to make sure we don't miss anything here. And those of you who are listening, you can still feel free to ask any questions if I'm moving too fast for you, if you have questions. You come to me with questions. I will answer your questions. We're almost done. Almost done here. Let's take a look at the hierarchy. There is a hierarchy within the Church of Satan itself. So let's get into that as well. Anton LaVey formulated a system of degrees during the earlier years of the Church of Satan, as such was a general practice in many prior social and esoteric organizations. The criteria for elevation in the Church of Satan, however, were not based on mysticism or occultism, but on knowledge of practical subjects beyond Satanism, and even more than that, on the application of such wisdom towards measurable ends. So LaVey experimented by mandating the specific colors for medallions which could be worn by each member according to degree, and for a time, written exams were given to assess a member's readiness for a particular level. In the mid-70s, it became clear that many members had become obsessed with jockeying for position, being overly concerned with their place in the organization rather than working towards advancement in the world outside. This was contrary to our carnal philosophy's emphasis on tangible personal progress. And so the existence of the degrees was de-emphasized in literature and formulaic methods for recognition were jettisoned. Now today, the Church of Satan declares that they maintain their traditional degrees, but they should not be seen as initiatory steps which are expected of members. The Church of Satan is not an initiatory organization. It is their position, therefore, that for those with awareness by living fully, you will have plenty of authentic initiatory experiences through the many avenues you explore. Hence, there's no need for such artificial posturing in the Church of Satan. In fact, no member is required to move beyond registered membership. The first degree denoting active membership is only for members who seek more involvement with the organization itself and other local members. The remaining degrees from the second through the fifth are not open to application or to request. The specific standards for them will not be publicly released, according to them. Their administration watches the progress of qualified members and may choose to grant recognition to outstanding individuals based on demonstrated excellence in the understanding and communication of satanic theory, coupled with significant potent practices in the arena of the real world, which have produced superior achievements. People naturally and quite organically rise to particular levels, and we may take note at our discretion. This is meritocracy at work. So if you are so inclined, keep the church updated on your accomplishments so your progress may be noted. So the only thing you got, so basically, guys, you just got to become president, and then you can advance to the highest degree. So there are some degrees here. So let's take a look here. The first, of course, is registered member. You become a member of their church. The second is active. That's the first degree. Registered member is no degree. Active member is the first degree. You're an active Satanist. So this is a person who is actively involved in the Church of Satan. Then you progress to witch or warlock, which is the second degree. Then you finally will get to the fourth, which is magistra or magister. And then you will reach the level of MAGA or magus, which I can only assume is head of the organization, since Peter Gilmore is the head of the Church of Satan and his title is magus. Administrator, agent, and grotto master are descriptive titles for what people do not levels of rank. Thus, they can be held by members with different degrees. High priests and high priestesses are the top administrative titles that can only be held by fourth or fifth degree members. And those who hold the third through fifth degrees are all members of the priesthood of Mendes, and individuals with these titles may be called reverend. Very interesting. So we've got an idea of what the structure of the Church of Satan looks like. And now we can take a look even further into what it looks like by taking a look at some of the various jobs within the Church of Satan. So let's look first at agents. An agent is an individual who demonstrates a thorough grasp of the philosophy of the Church of Satan, skills in being able to communicate it, and would like to be trained as a contact for local media and other interested parties, may be chosen to serve as an agent for the Church of Satan. So there is an application you have to fill, and a course that appears to be needed in taking, that you have to take. Then we have the priesthood of Mendes. These are individuals who act as spokespersons for the philosophy of the Church of Satan, which include the titles of priest or priestess, magister or magistra, magus or maga. Members of the priesthood make up the Council of Nine, which is the ruling body of the organization. So we do have a ruling body. Appointed by and responsible to the high priest and high priestess or priestess, the order of the trapezoid consists of the individuals who assist in the administration of the Church of Satan, and members of their priesthood are people of accomplishment in the real world. They have mastered skills and won peer recognition, which is how they have attained their position. As above, so below, they are movers and shakers who are the core of the movement. While expected to be experts in communicating the philosophy of the Church of Satan, they are not required to speak on behalf of the church, and they may even choose to keep their affiliation and rank secret in order to better serve their personal goals as well as those of the organization. Thus, you may, as a member, encounter members of the priesthood and never even know it. Membership in the priesthood is by invitation only. The old truism, if you have to ask, you can't afford it, is certainly highly pertinent to the priesthood. Words to the wise, do not ask, how do I become a priest? So we have an idea. So contrary to popular beliefs about the Church of Satan, there is some semblance of organization. There is an organization. There is a hierarchy that exists. For those who are part of the Church of Satan, there is a hierarchy. They have jobs within their church. Like many churches, many organizations, there are certain levels that one can advance to. Interestingly enough, within the Church of Satan, one of the major ways in which a person advances is to be successful outside of the church. So in order to advance to these higher levels within Satanism, a person must be successful in life. They have to achieve outside of just knowing about their religion. They have to pursuing their own desires, their own dreams, their own goals, and be successful in those pursuits in order to find themselves advancing in this organization, which is an interesting way of organizing your religion and organizing, you know, organizing the organization that is, you know, sort of keeping your religious ideology alive. And to a degree, we notice that there is a level of secrecy in some cases. Not all the information is available to us. And this is not really all that uncommon. There are certain positions within the Catholic Church that we don't know, that we don't really know the criteria for, because they are well guarded. They don't tell us what they are. There are certain levels within various churches in which you cannot, or various other organizations, that you don't know about, that we don't have access to the information to, because, quite frankly, they're incredibly secretive about it. They want to protect it, and they don't want to just let anybody know. Currently, the administration of the Church of Satan is as follows. Magus Peter H. Gilmore, as far as I know, is the guy that's running things right now. He was appointed to the head of the high priest of the Church of Satan in 2001. Besides him, Magistra Peggy Nadrimia is the high priestess, and Magistra Blanche Barton was the Magistra Templi Rex. So that is their core leadership right now. That's who's running things for the Church of Satan. But that's all I've got for you guys today on Satanism. Let me just point you all in the right direction of places you can look. I mentioned that you could pick up a copy of LaVey's Satanic Bible on Amazon. It's pretty easy to acquire, actually. You don't even have to go there. You can pick up a copy at Barnes & Noble. Just pop into your local Barnes & Noble if you're interested and go get yourself a copy of it. It's really not hard to get. But it's not a difficult book to acquire. You can also take a look at Jesper Agard Peterson's Introduction, Embracing Satan, Contemporary Religious Satanism, a Critical Anthology. You can take a look at that. The Peculiarities of Lithuanian Satanism by Milda Alasauskian. And finally, you can look at Peter Gilmore's Science and Satanism, which is an interview that he has done. Point of inquiry. It was actually done in 2013, so something to take a look at. You can take a look at the Satanic Bible, of course. And finally, last but not least, you might take a look at the homepage of the Church of Satan, which is churchofsatan.com. Something to take a look at if you're interested in it. Hopefully this has shed some light on an otherwise sort of, mystical religion. As I mentioned before, I did briefly mention this. There are some within Satan that practice Satanism that do practice forms of magic, although it's, you know, a little bit different than the magic that, you know, people that practice Wicca or other forms of paganism practice. So satanic magic is a little bit different. It's often all about acquiring desires. It's all about empowerment. It's less about worship, less about and don't get me wrong, there are some rituals within Satanism that are all about worship. But magic, for the purpose of Satanists, is largely about what one can gain rather than what you can do for others or what you can do to improve a situation, as it happens within most neo-pagan religions. Magic is often a way of worship and a way of sort of not only getting closer to the gods and that you are trying to worship, but also improving a situation or speaking positively to a situation. So that's all I've got for you guys on Satanism. Take a look at churchofsatan.com if you want more information on their church. They have lots and lots of information on there. Take a look at the Satanic Bible if you're interested in it. Hopefully this has given you guys a better understanding of what a Satanist is and what many of them believe in. Not quite the spooky scenario that many of you probably were thinking it was going to be. So, yeah, I think we did pretty well today, guys. And I don't see any call-ins today, so I'm going to cut us a little short. We got through a lot of information pretty quickly. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This has been the Bareback Facts. I'm your host, Dallas Duclo, and I will be back next week with another edition of the Bareback Facts. Thanks for tuning in. Stay driven.